person. Good morning.
Yes, we can. Good morning.
Morning, Honorable Bryant.
Evening, Chair. Morning.
Morning, Honorable Singh.
Morning, morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues.
Morning, Honorable Nkunu.
Morning, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Morning, Honorable Gancho.
Just left. Oh, there she can.
Honorable Gancho Molo.
Morning, Chair, and good morning to everyone.
Honorable Mbata. Not yet. Honorable Paulson.
Mr. Blackcomb, Chair.
Morning, Honorable Paulson. Morning, Honorable Winkler.
Yes, Chair, it was shared. Chair. I've got load shedding, so my computer is slow this morning.
Myself too, for the first time in a year.
You're very lucky, Chair. What's this animal farm? Some people are more equal than others. We get 4 hours.
I congratulate you, Chair.
Introduction. Overview of the department and its entities. Legislative mandate. departmental programs. Honorable Mbata, I see your hand is up.
No, Chair, it's a legacy hand. Let me take it down. Sorry about that.
Okay. The linkages between the departmental priorities and the National Development Plan Vision 2030. Move to page 4. The medium-term strategic plan and annual performance plans of the department and its entities 2023 and 2024. Configuration of the department. Strategic objectives of the department. allocation of budget. Go to page 8. Administration, page 10. Responses, oceans and coast. climate change, air quality, and sustainable development.
I just want to respond here to the departmental responses. And on number, let me just look quickly. Now, the bullet point three, or at, the question was asked about Kendall Power Station. And I just want to get clarity here. Here is not a response of what the department said, but the department actually said that they will give me or as a written response to the Kendall Power Station situation. So I don't know, because if they're going to give a written response, which we haven't received yet, that it should come into the minutes, and if we should just note that the department said they will respond in writing. But there's no response to that bullet point here.
Which page is that, Honorable?
We were just at it. Don't move on to Lika. We were just there. Go back to where we just was now. We were right there now. It is page, I think, 11. Yeah, there we are. The committee also wanted to know how the Kendall Power Station was reporting on its emissions and whether the department. The question was because Sakis doesn't have Kendall, which is our biggest polluter, on it, and how do they monitor it? And they said it was a big issue, Kendall, and they would rather respond to me in writing. So my question is, there's no response here on that, so... And we haven't received response yet from them in writing. So my question is, shouldn't the writing response be on here as a departmental response? And if not, okay, but then we haven't still received that written response. I just want to make a comment on that.
Chair?
Santa?
It is under... It is under recommendations, actually the first one, under recommendation.
Do you agree with that, Honorable Weber? The department should submit in writing a report on the emissions from the Kendall Power Station and notices issued to polluting industries or companies in the Highveld priority area.
Chair, I'm fine with that, but if I also remember correctly, I think we gave the department that day on everything we did a 10-day response time, which we also are passed beyond. So if someone can just follow up, that we do get the written responses. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I come in, Honorable Member?
Yes, Shilega. Is it 7 days or 10?
It was 10, but I did ask for the written responses, Chair. It's just that Minister has not signed them off. So I'm expecting them this afternoon. That's the information that I received.
Chair, can I ask then, I just want clarity on this. When we receive the written response, is the written response going to be included into this document that we see before us or not?
Honourable Members, what is your view on that?
Personally, my view, Chair, is it should be included as it was part of that meeting and that was the questions asked, and that will be the departmental response to the inquiries of the committee. So my personal feeling is it should be included. Thank you.
Honourable Ganjo.
Chair, thank you. I think also, Chair, the written responses should form part of this report. So if we are still they are still outstanding, I don't know, Chair, if we should wait before we adopt it so that we can include everything. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, can I suggest that those written responses be incorporated in this report but be highlighted in red? Will that, before we move for the adoption of this report, it should encapsulate all those areas that are outstanding. Will that be fair?
Sorry, Chair, I've just got my hand up. Do you mind?
Okay. Come in, Honourable Bryant.
Thanks very much, Chair. I fully agree with Honourable Weber and Honourable Gunshow. I did read through to the end of the document where they've got the recommendations, and I'm sure we'll get to that at the end. There are a few points there in terms of steps to be taken going forward, in terms of the minister has to respond within 90 days, and provide responses, etc. I wonder if we could include it in there as well, because there was also a recommendation, a written response that is outstanding from the Botanical from SANBI in terms of the Botanical Society, which also I feel should be included in those recommendations. In fact, I can advise in terms of that, whether maybe we could put it there in terms of the recommendations going forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Dada?
Chair?
Yeah, Baba.
Those ones, it will be up to the committee. If the committee feels that they need to be added here, they will be added here. Or if it needs to be, they need to be requested in a letter separately. My bit of a small concern is maybe on the timeline that it might have a bearing when we wait for department to respond, because there is no guarantee as yet that they will respond on time for the tabling of this report.
My
referring to the points that need to be added. For example, there's the general agreement that the responses of the department should be included in the report. So that is fine. But as time moves, I don't know when the minister will sign off, but that can be, it's more on if the minister signs off on time. And I'm not sure whether that will be sufficient responses for the committee to consider it sufficient enough to be included as a response or something else. That is just the responses can be incorporated. There's no problem with that. It's just the timeline that's a bit of an uncertainty since we don't have responses as yet.
Honorable Winkler?
I also want to add to my notes that we had also spoken to the Minister about how the Department of Environmental Affairs was engaging with other departments, and the Minister responded that there was the Presidential Climate Commission, which included the cross-cutting departments dealing with the just energy transition. And one of the recommendations was that the portfolio committee actually invited the Presidential Climate Commission representatives to actually report back on the stakeholders back to our committee. So I'm not sure if that is the recommendation, but that was something that was included.
Honorable Weber, followed by Honorable Mbata.
I'm sorry, and I appreciate what Nklangla said. Chair, this is an important piece of document, and it's a very important a meeting where everything that the department is doing is being discussed, and that's where we debate this. And on the meeting, we did ask for all responses to be within 10 days. And I don't want to take the minister on, but I do feel that the priority for the department should be that this is in time for us because the debates are starting and everything, and I feel our document has to be a true reflection of what happened today and what was discussed and the promises from the department to have the responses here. So I do want anyone to encourage these responses to be sent and documented, whether it's under recommendations or whether it's under questions. Otherwise, this is not a true reflection of feedback and of everything that has happened. And it makes it very difficult then to accept this document with things outstanding. And that should be a priority because the debate is starting this week and next week on this. And I really feel that this is very, very important for us to have this document to reflection. Thank you.
Honorable Mbatha.
Thank you, Chair. I think we have a challenge here of reaching a response from the department and also of the complying to on the submission of this document to Parliament. I think I will because even if we stay, we will wait for this responses. Like Kanta has said, we are not sure when will this responses be signed by the minister, unless if we're sure that we are going to get it. But even if we get it, there's no way that we can attach the responses that we haven't seen in the meeting. So I will follow your suggestion that we continue with this report, but with the highlight that in red that by the time we finalize this document, we're still awaiting the responses from the department. Because even if they come, we'll have to look at them and discuss them before they get attached to the report. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Weber, is that the legacy end? Honorable Winkler?
Legacy, sorry.
Okay. All right. I understood Tileka to be saying that in their communication with the department, these responses are waiting for a sign off by the minister, which is likely to happen this afternoon. And I had proposed that we highlight them in red so that we don't really have to go through the entire document again. I'm proposing that we conclude this document with those areas that are lacking. Once they are incorporated into this report and highlighted in red, we go straight to the areas that are highlighted and then adopt the report if that is agreeable. Are we fine with that, honorable members?
I'm fine with it. Thank you, Chair.
Agreed, Chair.
Agreed, Chair.
Okay. Chilis, can you kindly put some pressure on the minister and the department that we were unable to adopt this report because it does not have part of the commitments that they had made to respond to members of the committee in writing. So we are unable to adopt it. Once you have received it, Nhlanhla will then incorporate it into this report, highlight it in red, so that we don't go through the entire document. We just go straight, zoom into the red areas, and then move for the adoption.
Yes,
sir. Let's proceed, Mr. Giniza. 5.5. Chemicals and Waste Management. Forestry management.
Chairperson?
Honorable Weber?
Chair, I just have two questions here with forestry. There was a question for myself and Honorable Paulson about the distribution of trees to municipalities, how that is managed and how that is regulated, which is not referring here. And then there was also the question about Limpopo and Mpumalanga that they put together in a report like this, and the undertaking from the department was to for our use to separate them so that it is not one but actually two provinces as it should be. And I don't see that here, so I'm not sure if that was not too important, but I do think it should be in here, if I'm not mistaken. Thank you.
Can it be noted, the Limpopo Mpumalanga matter, Chilis?
Yes, Chair.
Fisheries management.
Sorry, Chairperson.
Honorable Brian.
Thanks, Chair. The only thing I would say, and it doesn't seem to reflect any discussion at all on fisheries management side of things, and I do recall that there was some discussion on this. I'm not sure Honorable Paulson or anybody else recalls that, but I'm not picking it up anywhere in terms of discussion. Is it just me, or?
Which part is that, Honorable Brian?
Program 9, Fisheries Management. It speaks about what the department presented, but it doesn't reflect any of the discussion.
I agree, Chair. There was quite a discussion on this in any case. I agree with Honorable Bryant.
Chair?
Hunter?
Yes, there was a bit of discussion. There was actually more discussion in the week before that because we're dealing with fisheries staff mode. On this one, there was a comment from the DDG Fisheries that she expected Honorable Paulson to be in the meeting to raise a certain issue around the support to small-scale fishers. But other than that, during the meeting, I do not recall a discussion around this branch. I remember in the previous week on the fishing rights allocation and the state of the fisheries resources, that's where there was a lot of discussion.
Okay, Chair. So that's what I'm recalling then. So obviously none of those discussions have been included in this. Okay.
Can we agree that you look at the previous discussions that Honorable Bryant is making reference to? Just put a note there. The note on the fisheries discussions under 5.9, yes. Okay. Sunparks.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to, the first bullet point, I just have to get, South African National Park. Sunbox clarified that the number of visitors has exceeded, okay, now the other first bullet point, sorry, just going a little bit up, Talika. Other up, down.
Other up, down.
It is about the line items that it mentions, and then the response. The committee inquired about the 11% increase in visitors. That's the first bullet point. The lack of security line items in the Kruger National Park. Resources for appointing 82 rangers and budget allocations for rangers residing out of the park. The question was specifically on getting a separate line item for security, that the focus that we can actually see what is happening in Sandburg regarding security. That was the question. The answer was that they don't have a line item like that. It was not ring fence. That was not the question. As the answer is, the question was to have a line item for that. And the answer was that they will look into it and consider it. They don't say they were going to do it, but the lady said they will look into it and consider it, but currently there is not such a line in them. So the question was not to ring fence it. It was to have a separate security line item. So I do want that to be corrected, please.
Please make that note today.
Thank you,
Chief.
Chancellor?
Does it sound more like it? That the proposal for specifying security on the budget will be considered?
Honorable Weber?
I actually, there's 4 points in that first bullet point about the 11% increase, and every one of those four things are very different from one another. It would be nice if there's on top the bullet point just saying that the request was that there will be a security line item on the budget, and then the response to that was that the department will look into it and to maybe consider it. I do think that first bullet point is very loaded, and it's actually different things. So it would be nice to have a different bullet point just saying it was requested by the committee that there maybe be a security line item where we can actually really see what is happening with the security and how everything is going. I know this, we said there was a lot of things involved with that. And then the second, then where the response come in is just where they say the department said that they will look into it or consider a separate line item for security. Thank you. Yeah, and Talika, if you maybe can just say, it's not the lack of a security item, it's not the, you can say the lack of a security line items in the Kruger National Park budget, but the request is to maybe put a security line item onto the budget. And then the response will be below then. To, I'm sure you can leave it like that if Nkankla is happy with it. That the department...
that the department specify
that is what happened, and then just below where the South African National Parks response is, then that will be the department said they will discuss and consider it. And just say the department. Responded to discuss and consider a security line item for sandparks.
Does it sound like it?
Yes. Well, that is what they said.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Beg a bit, the last sentence on sandparks, that one. Can you just put NB there, that we want that comprehensive report?
As in putting it in the recommendations that it should be sent?
That would will be fine too. Can we go to his Mangaliso?
Jay, sorry, I am stepping on toes now. I am sure it was in this meeting with Sandbox where Honorable Bryant just brought up for the point of notice to bring up the target again for the rhino poaching. That should be zero. And I don't know if he wants to come in. I'm 100% sure at this meeting. He just said he knows it's already, you know, people are tired of it, but he did bring that one up again, and I don't see that anywhere. So I don't know if you want to say something about it, but then I will. It's not anywhere, and it is something that is quite an issue for us, so maybe it should be ministered here somewhere at Sandbox specifically. Thank you, Jay.
I'm not sure whether Honorable Bryant would like for this to be a recommendation that the target be set to be as zero or just be kept here as part of the discussion.
Who made this commitment? Isn't it that they said so, or is it Honorable Bryant who made that recommendation?
Thanks, Chair. I'll come in if need be. Yeah, I mean, it was part of the discussion, and it is our position that, you know, the targets, setting a target of allowable poached animals should be reviewed, and that the target should be zero. I'm not entirely sure, and I thank Honourable Weber for recalling that point, because I think it is an important one. I'm just not entirely sure whether or not we would be able to include it in this document. I had a look, and I'm not entirely sure where we could put it. Oh, there we go. I see that's been put down there. Budget location register in the Parker setting. I would put potentially to say the reevaluation of or the setting of more ambitious rhino poaching targets. Because it wasn't a formal proposal that was agreed to by the committee, as much as I would like to have seen it as that. So I think we wouldn't be reflecting accurately. But I think to say a more ambitious rhino poaching target, something along those lines. But I'm happy to be guided by the committee. If the committee agrees with that, that's fine. That's great.
How would you like it to be to read, Honourable Bryant?
That last little yellow one there, budget location, which is right out of the park, and the setting of the post round a target to zero. Yeah, I'm happy. If you're happy with that and the committee's happy with that, leave it at that. That's great. Perfect.
Honourable members, are you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable with that as well. Thank you.
Is it achievable?
Sorry, I just want to come in here. I mean, this is not a debate on it, but there should be no rhino poaching or no poaching of any animals should be done. So the target should always be zero. Whether it's achievable or not, anything above is already not reaching the target. We cannot ever be happy with 250 or 150, and I know it's a very hard target, and we also know we cannot keep everyone responsible for it, but no poaching should take place. So I think working from that point of view, I think that should be the target, but we all know it might not be achievable, but we're not responsible for the poachers. But that should be the target. Thank you, Chair.
Perhaps I hear honourable members to be saying, let's make it a no, Ganta. There shouldn't be poaching, either of a rhino or a lion. There should not be poaching. I don't know if you'll put it nicely there. The setting of poached rhino target to zero. If you put it nicely there, there shouldn't be poaching at all. That is what we mean.
All right, we'll rework it, Chair.
Okay. Can we move then? We were at Isimangaliso. Can you also highlight that first bulletin on Isimangaliso? Or is it part of the recommendation? No, at the bottom, Isimangaliso for the first bulletin. I'm just saying it might be highlighted so that when we re-look at this document, we should get that written response. There is only two in Isimangaliso, and if that's the case, let's go to Sanbi.
Chairperson.
I'm muted, I'm sorry.
No problem, Chairperson.
Proceed, Honorable Brian. I wanted Ntandla to highlight on bulletin number 2 on Sunday that the committee noted that there were requests from the captive lion owners who would like to exit the industry. There's a question there that we wanted to know whether the department has had discussions with those people who want to exit the industry voluntarily. Can they give us a response also on that? Honorable Brian?
Thanks, Chair. It's minus on point... Oopsie, we've gone away again. Don't know where we're going to go back. There we go. The third bullet point just on the Botanical Society issue. If we can just amend that sentence, it just sounds a little bit clumsy where it says lifetime membership cost over thousands of rands. I think if we could just change that to say lifetime members had invested over thousands of rands to ensure that they had access to the gardens. So we say lifetime members had invested thousands of rands to ensure that they had access to those gardens. And you can take the rest of that sentence out. It's just a bit clumsy. So it's a lifetime member that invested thousands of rands to ensure that they had access to those gardens. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, excellent. Thank you. And then just the other point which was raised earlier as well, which is that the SAMBI CEO or SAMBI committed to providing a comprehensive response in terms of the reasons behind cancelling the membership agreements with Botsong. Chair Lecky, you did confirm that that would also come today, I think.
Okay. Honorable Winkler, you'll be followed by Honorable Dlamini. Wait. One second, Honorable Winkler. Honorable, let's just get that point of Honorable Brian captured first. My apologies, Honorable Winkler.
No problem, Chair. It was just Sandy, written response on cancellation of membership with Botsock. The lifetime members they responded to, but it's the written response on the cancellation of membership agreement with Botanical Society. Perfect, thanks.
Okay, Honorable Winkler.
So just with reference to that, I think, bullet point on the voluntary exit strategy for people that want to exit and lion hunting industry, the point was made that we are aware that the department has put out a call for public consultation on that voluntary strategy. What I had asked though was, what is the plan of the department regarding those who do not want to voluntarily exit the can line hunting decision? Thank you for the disagreement.
Did you capture that, Ntandla? There's a bit of an echo there, Honorable Winkler.
Not sure,
Okay, just between the yellow part and the red part, then, Chandler, what Honorable Winkler is asking is, what happens to those who joined voluntarily? If I capture you well, Honorable Winkler.
Sorry, Chair, no. The question was, those that do not want to voluntarily exit the canned lion hunting industry, what is the department's plan with those stakeholders?
Okay, there it is captured.
Thank you.
That's the highlighted part, am I right?
Thank you, Chair. I want to go back to the point that was raised by Honorable Winkler on a question of this lifetime membership and a lifetime member. Is it lifetime membership sort of like a green membership where actually it's no ending, it just goes on like that or what? Is it not going to open some of other attack from us if we talk about that time of lifetime membership and the lifetime membership and lifetime member? What is the difference between the two? If I'm out of line, therefore can correct me, but I just want to understand that. Thank you.
Honorable Winkler, followed by Honorable Bryant.
Chair, that wasn't my question. That was from Honorable Bryant. Thank you.
Honorable Bryant.
Thanks, Chairperson. There was a long discussion with the SAMBI CEO around this point, and the issue of the lifetime memberships was actually dealt with in that meeting, and SAMBI informed that those 450 lifetime members, their lifetime memberships would be honored. That the discussion is around the agreements between the Botanical Society and the free entrance that was previously granted to Botanical Society members, which was renewed on an annual basis. So those weren't lifetime memberships. So I understand Mr. Lamini's, Honorable Domini's point, but we're actually referring to renewals of memberships. And the CEO was going to give us a written response, which hopefully we'll get today, and that will clarify some of those issues as well. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Chair.
Honorable Mkunu.
Yes, Honorable Chair. On this matter, when we look at, I just want to check if we will need the written response. Should we? Yes, I agree that we should put it on. Should highlight it, but also when you go to the responses by the SAMBI, there are those responses that pertains to the to this particular matter of the Botanic Society membership, and there's a bullet where bullet number. Let me check 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, bullet number 6, where between the members and Botanic Society, and SANB is not liable to that. So, Honourable Chair, I think when we deal with that matter, can we deal with those also responses? Response on bullet number 5 and also on bullet number 6, where it is explained where SANB was giving the two explanations on how they are dealing with this matter. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Brian?
Thanks, Chair. Yes, Honourable Nkuni is correct. That was certainly reflected there. But then there was a further discussion after that whereby there was going to be a written response in terms of the reasons, so not in terms of the way forward, and I'll take the point there, in terms of the refunds, but in terms of the reasons for the change in the status quo, because there was quite a complicated reasoning seemed behind that, and the CEO agreed to provide that written response within 10 days. We haven't received it yet because from what Tieleka has advised, and perhaps she can advise you now on that, but what she said to me was that those responses are with the minister and should be signed off today. So I don't know if that's confirmed or not.
Okay. Honourable Nkun, is that another hand?
No, it's a legacy hand. My apology.
Can we then note it like that? Please highlight it that the CEO will provide the written response we have given him 10 days.
it had been affected by load shedding and some of the equipment did not automatically start up, even if the power came back. A report on weather station availability was submitted to the board. Chair, we also asked for that. We asked specifically to get and it took to get a written submission on which the question was specifically how many weather stations were still active and how many not and where they are stationed. And they undertook to send us a written report on that because we as a committee need to know, you know, especially on the high felt area, we said we need to know because that is where many of our emissions comes from. So they would have sent us a written report on that question. I'm not sure if that is appropriate to be in here, but I think it is. It was an important question to add the information on. I see the question just below concerning SACIS. It was responded that source did the air quality monitoring in conjunction with the department. That comes in with the question that we need to know where these weather stations are and how many of them are active or not.
Can I just check the practice with this report? Isn't it that the responses should come in from the point of view of ministers' responses as opposed to them forming part of the committee report? Has it been done before this way? Isn't it that the responses always come as part of ministers' responses?
Yes, Chair. The practice is generally that even though the question may be directed to the entity, the minister is the one that gives a sign off before it's sent to the committee.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, has the practice been that the responses are part of the report? Because my understanding is that the responses that we are looking for here are those that were supposed to have been provided to the committee at the time of discussions. But if there are further questions, those will come in as minister's responses at the level of the plenary in the assembly. Am I right?
Yeah, in what happened in the past is that the responses from the department were not really captured, but members raised that these issues were responded to and the report created an impression that the department did not respond, so they had to be included. So as to whether the committee was satisfied with the response or not, that will not really go into the discussion, can go into the follow-ups, which can be incorporated either in the debate in the House or as part of the recommendations of this report, depending on the decision of the committee. For example, the committee can also expand in terms of the recommendations based on either something that was omitted in that meeting or what has been captured as requiring a response.
Okay. Dr. Watts? Is Dr. Watts in the meeting?
Chairperson?
One second, Honorable Weber. Dr. Watts? Is Dr. Watts in the meeting? Chilika?
Chair, he was earlier. Let me check.
Okay, I see him. I see he's in a meeting. Brazgodny? Okay, Honorable Weber.
What you want to say, and I in a way agree with you that the problem with what's happening here is this is things that was discussed on the meeting, that was on the meeting, say they will respond to us written or not, you know, in a way. And for order for this document to be a true reflection, you need to have everything that was said on that meeting here, because this is the minutes, basically, if you can call it that, of that meeting. So if the department, because I recall also the minister was in and out that day, so the department is doing the work and she signs off. So there I do agree with Nklankla, whether it is important for us, because it was enough for us to actually have discussed this on that meeting, and the department did take certain, certain agreements or certain steps to give us feedback on that. So I do feel, since that was the undertaking on the meeting and all the written responses had to be by Jalika today, that is one of them and should be included. That's just my opinion. Thank you, Jim.
I think we must agree that what is outstanding here should not come as ministers' responses, but should be as information that is outstanding following the discussion that we had with the entities and the department. I think that is how we have been moving. So if there are other issues that relates to, that warrants ministers' responses, they'll be asked at a separate platform. But for purposes of this report, these are the questions that were outstanding at the time of the deliberations of the report. Are we agreed, Honourable Member?
Okay, now I'm back.
Yes, welcome back, Honourable Minier Watts.
Yeah, what I was saying is that the practice has always been that the questions which were not responded to during the meeting, they automatically become part of the foundation that is actually at the end of the report. That's why, you know, if we reflect back, there is always a slot for the minister to respond on the UTHR, on the budgetary report. There is the determination of the time that the committee arrives at by actually saying that the minister should respond on these issues on such a day. But it has never happened that the part of the written response become now part of committee's report, the extent that the committee is sort of immobilized to move on its own report. It cannot adopt its own report because there are recommendations that have not actually come through from the minister or from the entity. It cannot be that way. The committee report cannot be held hostage by lack of responses timelessly to become part of the committee report. You know, the way how I hear you dealing with this issue is that the response must be attached to the report of the committee. It cannot be that way. The committee report, formulates part of the discussions that occurred during the ACC and the budget meetings, briefings, and discussions. That has been the fact, that's my experience. Thank you.
Okay. What then do you recommend, Brother Courtney? What should happen?
What I would like to recommend is if it was a revolution or response of the minister of the anti had arrived at an opportune time, they would have become part of the committee before. But because the committee is sitting today to adopt its own report, the committee should adopt its own report and the outstanding response to the action be part of minister's response to the committee on the issues which emanate from the discussion on the budgetary report.
Okay. Honourable members, do you follow what Honourable Scottney is saying? Minister, what?
Is Chair? Okay,
yes, Honourable Brian.
Thanks, Chair. Dr. Watts has provided some very, very cogent advice and guidance. I think it refers back to what I alluded to earlier on at the beginning of the discussion around ensuring that it's, you know, these points are covered in the recommendations right at the end, where it says what we expect within 90 days or however long from the minister. So I think his guidance is good. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, we take that guidance. So Nkandla, we then say that all these areas that we have highlighted will come as the recommendations, but the responses will be provided as minister's responses, following the guidance of Brass Courtney. All these areas that we have highlighted will then go to recommendations of this particular report of the committee, but their responses will come in not as attachments, but as ministers' responses to the report and the recommendations of the committee report.
Noted, Chair.
Okay, Chair, so what exactly does that mean? Am I going to get my information in original response or in this committee or from the minister?
Ons wag nog steeds Agvader Weber. We're waiting for minister to finish, to sign them off, and then she will send them to the committee. But from this report, though, they will come as recommendations, but after she has signed off, they will then come as minister's response. They will come, but not for purposes of this report. I understand,
but that does create a problem for me. I am 100% with you, Chair, but remember that we need this document as well for our debates and for two reflections of the meeting. So I don't know if we should have a separate minutes of that day's meeting, because I understand the minister's response and everything, but we still need the information that was undertaken to us to be sent to us within 10 days. And I think that is what I'm requesting here as well, is that what's the agreement? And it makes things very difficult to know. Maybe we get the responses in 3 weeks' time, you know, and we need the information now in order for us to, on a certain aspect, to move forward. So I hear and I accept what you say, but it does... Do you understand what I'm trying to say? It creates a little bit of a loophole and everything for us not to have the needed information that we discussed in our debates, for instance. So thank you. I accept the ruling.
Okay. Chileka Wilson. Yes, Brass Courtney.
Yeah, my colleague, Alain Ambrose, was concerned. Although the documentation expected from the department, which have not arrived as of now while the committee is processing its report, they could arrive tomorrow, they could arrive another time. That doesn't mean that the minister is bound only to recommend at a putting a grid something. If the minister hasn't got a response that is due to the committee now, then we would wait for 90 days, 60 days. But if the minister does a response today, then that 10 hectares will be availed to the members. The response would be made available to the members. And yet, the committee could adopt its report with the recommendations hinting on a documentation that comes later today or later tomorrow. That's why when you look at the set of the foundation, we in this committee secretariat, including the new chairperson, we don't fold our hands to say, let us wait for those 90 days for the minister to respond. We migrate some of those recommendations into our committee schedule, into our committee program. We begin to engage with them. At the end of the 90 days, we look back and see how many of the recommendations we have exhausted and how many of them we have not exhausted. Then we request the minister to supply us with us sending information. It doesn't mean that because this request that is required under whoever has not actually arrived today, then she would have access to any response only after 90 days. No, she could have response to questions written today or tomorrow, and still the committee secretary can avail that to her. Thank you.
Okay, I think there's consensus. Chileka has said to us that we are going to get, she is waiting for the minister to sign off the responses. What it means is that they are ready. They are just waiting for her to peruse and sign off. So she said, but it's highly possible that we might get those written responses today. Now, what I had posed to the committee and the staff is, does it happen that these responses that are from the entities and from the minister, should they form part of this report? And the answer, therefore, is no. But we are saying they should come in this report as recommendations. Now, what needs to happen is that Chileka will make a follow-up with the minister, including leaders of entities who made undertakings to the committee that they will submit written responses. So what we are going to do is just to put them there as recommendations and await the signing off and submission by the minister.
Thank you, sir. Really, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I really understand that. Just one comment, but I understand we're waiting for the minister's responses, but all the other information that we talk about that we will get later. I just want to make this minute that the undertaking in this meeting for all that other stuff was also within 10 days, which it was part of the minister's response or not. So I just want to comment on that, Chair, that we do want the department and everyone that did take undertakings or sending responses, whether it's from the minister or not, the due time was already gone. And I just want that also minute that people have to stay within the commitments they make in our meetings. Thank you.
Okay. That is noted, Honorable Will. Can we proceed, Mr. Giniza? The MLRF? Recommendations. last line after Mr. Reddy Mayor.
I'm not sure if Honourable Winkler's hand is up or if it's a legacy hand, but if she's first, I also would like to ask something.
Honourable Winkler.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, so the first point was that we'd also asked under waste management how the waste management strategy plan is going to incorporate informal sectors. How they were going to deal with waste management about informal sectors, they don't have the resources to capacity and how that was going to be pushed to municipalities. And then just go up the bottom of the recommendation. So down to the bottom of it. So with regards to sandbox, the question that was asked was what sort of climate change resilience and adaptation plans did sandbox have given the worsening impact of climate change? And so not just on impact, but what is the resilience and adaptation strategy going to be in case of severe droughts, wildfires, etc.? Thank you.
The second bulletin from the bottom. Sunparks must submit a comprehensive report, she says, not only on the impact of climate change, it should also speak about the adaptation plan, mitigation and adaptation plan.
And resilience, Chair.
And resilience. There on the minister should submit a detailed which law is this? The 90 days is here. Will we still be here in that 90 days?
It was inherited decision of the committee because some members were of the view that it should be two working weeks, that it was a month, until they settled on 90 days. But it's up to the committee.
Okay, are we sleeping peacefully with 90 days, Honorable Singh?
No, Chair. No, Chair. I've been following the meeting. Don't think I'm quiet, but I've been following the meeting 60 days maximum.
There's a proposal of 60 days from Honorable
Singh. Yeah.
Honorable Kuni.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am fine with the 60 days proposed by Honorable Singh. But also, Chair, I don't know if we continue with the highlighting of the last bullet in the recommendation, because I think we've highlighted it when we were dealing with the comments by the portfolio committee, and in these recommendations, these final recommendations, we also have all these bullets where it says that whether it's Sandy, whether it's Sandhap or Simanganiso, or the department itself must submit a written response. I would say they also include that Sandy must submit a written response. But we don't highlight it. We leave it like all the others, and we also change that 90 days to 60 days. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you, Chair. Just maybe to make a follow-up, is that on this thing of 60 days, 90 days and all that, it doesn't have an open and no ending. Is it possible to say, if we say 60 days, when does this 60 days expire? Because now we might end up tomorrow, it's still 60 days, still counted 60 days and so forth and all that. Can you put a date when actually this 60 days will expire, so that anybody can get the report, can be able to find out and make a follow-up and say, this is what actually was supposed to be done, therefore they have not yet submitted. Because I can see the way the flow is that now 10 days, they must submit, but we don't have an action plan where actually we say, by this particular point in time, it must be able to be submitted. So I'm suggesting, let's put an expiring date when actually this thing can be able to be done.
If you read that sentence, Honorable Dlamini, your answer is there.
The minister?
Yes. The minister should submit a detailed response to the committee on all the recommendations made in this report within these 60 days after the adoption of this report. So if we adopt this report today, 60 days starts tomorrow.
All right, thanks, Chair. Thank you very much.
Honorable Singh?
Yeah, Chair, no, you covered me on that one. I'm just thinking about something here in Planta and Doc, is that, we are asking here SANBI to submit written responses, etc. But the person accountable to the committee is the minister. Those SANBI and all must report to the minister, and then it must come. So when we say 60 days here, it's not just the ministerial, the issue directed to the minister. The minister is fully accountable for all those entities. So somewhere we've got to have a catch-all phrase to say, the minister should have a detailed response to the committee on all the recommendations, including those made on the entities. So, we've got to hold her accountable. The minister is accountable, I would imagine. I don't know. I'm just putting it before us.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Honorable Singh. I will tell you why it was captured this way. Like I said earlier, in those deliberations of the committee, the CEOs and board chairpersons made commitment to the committee that they will submit written responses. But then now that it's a committee report, we should rather say the SANBI must then provide a response to the minister, who will then provide the committee with the response on behalf of all the entities. I think if we put it like that, it will sound much better. The minister, Tanta, you capture us. The minister on behalf of SANBI, for instance, where you have highlighted the last sentence, SANBI must submit. So it will be Not that one. The one, the yellow one. Yes. That is the assertion that, if I'm not misconstruing you, Honorable Singh.
Yeah, it's just that the chair, no, you're there. You see, if we put it for Sunbe, I just look at the one before, we got Sun Parks as well. So maybe we must have a catch-all in the end, Danta. The minister should submit a detailed response to the committee on all departmental and entity recommendations, including reports by the various entities. Because we don't want her to report on the departmental issues only. But she is fully accountable to report. But I see we've got Sandparks that needs to report, Sandby that needs to report. So let's put a catch-all phrase somehow or the other. English is not my first language. Maybe Dave can help us. You know, how we hold the minister responsible eventually for making sure that all these reports from the department and the entities are submitted to us. Thank you.
Minister, I think that catch-all should then read as follows. The minister should submit a detailed response. No. Remove A. The minister should submit detailed responses to the committee on all departmental, on behalf of the department. On behalf of the department, and all its entities.
Yeah, and then you continue it within 60 days.
Within 60 days. Behalf of the department and all its entities made in this report within 60 days after the adoption of the report by the National Assembly. Does it read good? Perfect. Having considered the budget and the annual performance plan of the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, the Portfolio Committee on Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, there's a bit of repetition there. Having considered the budget and the APPs of the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, the Portfolio Committee, you can just remove off, on. Start from on, remove, on, forestry, that's a repetition. The Portfolio Committee recommends to the House to adopt, remove the forestry. Yes. To adopt the budget vote allocation for 23-24 financial year. I'm scared to call those figures. I'm not very good with maths. Okay, are we all happy?
Yes. Speaking for myself.
I'm sure you're speaking on my behalf too, Honorable Steve.
Yes, Chair. But my question is, why do we keep highlighting the last bullet?
Okay. It is no longer highlighted, Honorable Kunu. Will you sleep peacefully tonight?
Thank you, sir.
Okay, go down, Danta. Let's see. Is that the end?
Yes, that's the end, Chair.
Honorable Singh moves. Thank you, Honorable Singh. Can you get the seconder?
Yes, Chair, I second.
Honorable Kunu seconds. Honorable Dlamini?
Third handed.
Honorable Dlamini, third hands. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. That is the draft, that is a report. No longer a draft. It's now the report of the Portfolio Committee. I see we are running extremely out, way behind schedule. We are scheduled to have a presentation by TGA. We had requested that they must join this meeting. Are they in the meeting, Chile? Honorable Brian, I see your hand.
Thanks, Chairperson. Can you just note, I know it wasn't a vote, but just the abstention of the DA members just for that final adoption point. And then I, unfortunately, Chairperson, have to step out of the meeting. I have another meeting that's starting now at 1 o'clock, so I won't be participating in the fisheries presentation. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. We welcome the departure. We don't know that first part, Honorable Brian. We'll just behave as if we did not hear you. On a lighter note.
Thank you. Thank you, Chip.
All right. Honorable members, can we then, Chilega, is the PGA in the meeting?
Chair, they are in the meeting.
Honorable members, with your permission. Sorry?
They joined Chair since 12.
Oh, no, no. Our apologies. That was a very thick document that we had to deal with. And we also have the plenary at 2 o'clock. All of us will have to join the National Assembly. We can spare at least 35 minutes before we conclude. I want to take this opportunity to thank all the members who are here. Honorable members, the Secretary General of the Parliamentarians for Global Action, Ms. Adam, I hope she's here, and her team. It is an honor for us to be here today to discuss this important issue of building resilience in small-scale fishing communities in our country. As we all know, many coastal fishing communities have historically been ostracized and marginalized, and they face a range of challenges that threaten their livelihoods, from poverty, from unemployment, from climate change, the declining high-value fish stocks, the overlapping fishing grounds within the commercial sector, the syndicates of crimes, and economic and social marginalization. We know that government is making progress to address these exclusions of our communities through the allocation of small-scale fishing rights. And we also know that the process has been fairly slow and very much unfair to the small-scale fisheries, particularly in the Western Cape, although there is a bit of progress that has been registered. We also know that the department aims to conclude the allocation in the Western Cape, which is the only remaining coastal province, in few months to come. The allocation of small-scale fisheries is not the end and all. We want to see a sustainable small-scale fisheries where fisheries resources are equitably shared and sustainably supported by the diversified livelihoods and opportunities. Now, we are tasked as a portfolio committee to oversee and providing support to small fishing cooperatives through integrated development support program, to ensure that the department delivers on the objectives outlined in the policy of small-scale fishing. fishing community should be supported, because it is our view that they continue to play a very important role in sustaining local economies and preserving cultural heritage and promoting inclusive and sustainable fishing practices. We thus have to craft tools and interventions with practices to ensure that strategies and resources are in place to strengthen the resilience of these communities, to ensure that they continue to thrive in the face of all diversity, adversity. And if we work together towards the future where small-scale fishing communities in South Africa are not only surviving, but are also thriving to address the triple challenges of inequality, unemployment, and poverty. By so saying, I wish to welcome the Secretary General of Global Action, Ms. Adam, who will then introduce her team and probably take the committee through. Ms. Adam, thank you very much for being here. Welcome.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm not our Secretary General. I'm just here together with my colleagues on behalf of PGA. Our Secretary General had to leave, unfortunately, so we can just continue with the next speaker to also appreciate the time we have available.
Okay, welcome.
I just wanted to confirm, am I supposed to start to speak, Leila and Sarah? Good afternoon, everyone.
Yes, please. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Okay. Is it possible I can get permission to share my screen? If not, I could just go ahead with my speaking notes.
Okay, Chilis, can you ensure that Ms. Isaac can share a screen? It's much easier to... Yeah, you have been allocated the right, ma'am. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. I'll do so, and I will start my... good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure speaking here, and I'll... protocols observe to everyone listening in. My name is Maliba Isaacs. I am from UWC, Institute for Poverty, Land and Agrarian Studies, and my work is on specifically small-scale fisheries. So I have a couple of pointers to my talk, is to talk about co-management and the role of women, and I'm going to try and not spend too much time on this because we have a really short time that has been allocated. So in 2012, I reviewed co-management in Africa, and this was 20 years since the introduction of co-management. And co-management mainly focus on decentralizing management responsibilities to national departments, to form newly formed institutions that promote user rights. So the process of co-management was basically to move away from the state centralized management that was had a lot of failures, and also to a large extent, self-management was not necessarily what was supported. So we had the two extremes, and bringing the two together, co-management look at to what extent there is the sharing of responsibilities between government and communities when it comes to management of the resources. So the process of institutionalizing a co-management through fisher representation, where participation in decision-making and management responsibilities form a key part. Now, this is the key part of co-management, but that has not necessarily had been the case. Co-management has been mainstream upstream in Southern Africa in fisheries by Danida, and also South Africa, including South Africa in the 1990, in the early 1990s, started from 1993, together with development agencies NORAD. But NORAD also focus on fisheries co-management, but with a special focus on the reform of fisheries policies in South Africa, Namibia, and Mozambique. Looking at the kind of 10 years of looking at how co-management was done in Southern Africa, there were some key pointers that challenges in terms of this. Number one, that the co-management groups that were formed, mainly beach village committees in Malawi and other parts of South Africa, and also in the Olifant Rivier, where co-management was formed, in the region, there were immediate conflict with traditional authorities, because traditional authorities, there were already entities there. There was also a lack in the South African case, the lack of access rights. You just mentioned, Chair, that 2022, the rights for small-scale fisheries has not been finalized yet, and this means 29 years after democracy and a lack of access to small-scale fishers. But on the other hand, government tested and piloted co-management. So how can you manage the resource together with government without having access rights? So the main purpose of co-management at the time, and still is in my argument, is to download, to protect the resource and to download the monitoring and surveillance responsibilities of communities has been the main focus of co-management. Co-management is also seen as a way of integrating biological, social, and human dimensions in fisheries, but we have not really gotten it right. A lot of people are saying that co-management has been used as the panacea to sort out all small-scale fisheries problems, and I still think that is the case in South Africa. Everything becomes co-management and it loses its edge. People are also questioning that you have to, researchers are also questioning that you have to look at co-management regimes, and if it ignores that people are making lives from multiple sources, that's often a problem. A key factor as to why co-management has not worked is that co-management doesn't consider the power struggles between different stakeholders, so between traditional authorities, fishers, and in terms of democracy, there are a number of different stakeholders, and this is often where power sharing is often in conflict with the new philosophy. I don't think that the fisheries department in South Africa has really and truly adopted a new philosophy of co-management, where you're really looking at the triple inequalities, the burdens of poor people, of inequality, poverty, and unemployment, and to what extent that these participatory democracy can be part of this. So what is needed, I'm just rushing through, I have speaking notes that I can share, I'm just rushing through. I think it is important that for small-scale fisheries to be successful is that co-management need to for especially fishers, is that it needs to have an empowerment function, and that it is important that they are part of the implementation and evaluation of fisheries policy. And I think that I feel that the fisheries department is not necessarily accepting that is the case, with the devolving of power and decision making to local communities. For co-management to be successful, local government need to be involved, the government need to be involved. It cannot just be a function of the fisheries department, that is the national government, and not necessarily link with the local and provincial government. And to be part of the decision making is critical. It is important that small-scale fisheries is expected to facilitate social and environmental responsibilities in community and compliance. But I think it is also important that access rights should be given. So if we want to go forward in terms of doing a concerted effort, it is important that capacity and strengthening capacity is critical when it comes to small-scale fisheries. I was also asked to speak on the role of women, and I'm just going to kind of just look at just briefly touch on the role of women, that my concern in fisheries over the last 25 to 30 years that I've been working in South Africa in fishing communities, it feels that the role of women are being disappearing. While women are mothers of fishing families, they are caretakers, they are activists, some of them are businesswomen, and they are also entrepreneurs. Women experience of the fish, of the sea, the identity, they involve in the community, in the activism, and even with small-scale fishers that are women that are actively fishing, they also feel that the criteria of men that have been fishing for a lifetime is often should be not the same criteria than the type criteria that they are using. For example, they need to catch 18 ton, and if they don't meet it, they lose their quota. And this was the case of some of the women. To kind of wrap up this, it is often that fishing communities see activism and action against tourism, recreational activities, fearing with their particular fishing activities, the issues again, car powership and seismic surveys that has resurfaced now, challenges against the blue economy, litigation in the name of recognition, their livelihood and their right to food. And by 2022, it seems like nothing has changed. So it is clear women's role is disappearing. Nothing stays behind for them to eat. Everything is for sale. It is clear that local organizations in South Africa, fisher organizations, is weak. There are many charismatic leaders, and the committee may know many of them, mainly men with a few women. I've always argued that litigation cannot be the first resort. Strong local organizations should be the first resort, and that strengthening the base at local level to engage with local authorities is critical when we want to have good co-management arrangements for rights that have been allocated. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Isaac. I see there is another request to be given access to share screen.
It has been granted. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Paulson. Honorable Paulson, I see your hand is up.
Good morning, Chair, and good afternoon, rather, and thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, have we reached the Q&A section of the presentation, or is there another presentation?
I suspect that is the last presentation, Honourable Walton.
Thank you,
Chair. I suggest that we take it, and then we just take the Q&As once and for all.
Sure, Chair.
All right. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I've taken the liberty of putting my presentation up. I only have four slides, so I'll try and be very brief. Thank you very much for having us. My name is Wilmien Wickham. I'm from the Legal Resources Centre. I'm an attorney, and I've been working for the last 12 years or so with small-scale fishing communities. Also been a part of many of the policy, then the law reform and the regulation processes. So what I want to very briefly share with you today, you may have seen that the Environmental Law Institute, that's part of hosting this meeting, they produced a very, very helpful toolkit for best practices in regulating small-scale fishing, which was shared with the committee. And I'm going to use their framing. They talk about five steps to writing effective regulation for small-scale fishing. I'm going to use those steps, at least three of them, to show how we've done in South Africa. Because as you said in your introduction, we're not at the start. We have started regulating small-scale fisheries, and so this is really a moment, step five in their process. This is the moment to assess how it has gone. And where we need to improve. So without further ado, the first step that they emphasize in their toolkit is that before you start regulating a sector, you must understand that sector. And this point cannot possibly be overemphasized. It is absolutely critical that you do not design regulation in Pretoria or Cape Town without an understanding of what's happening on the ground and then impose it upon communities, because such regulation, it fails. People, it's not appropriate for the circumstances. People ignore it when they try and implement it. It very often simply fails because it is not in touch with what happens on the ground. Now, the good news is that in South Africa, there was actually this incredible process of understanding and debating this small-scale sector as it was before the rights were recognized. And that was after the Kenneth George judgment, which ordered the minister to recognize small-scale fishers. There was a seven-year process whereby fishers and experts and many people in the sector came together for 7 years debating what the sector looks like and how it should be regulated. And the outcome of that process was the small-scale fisheries policy, which was also debated at NEDLAC and then gazetted in 2012. So that work was done. But unfortunately, after the policy was gazetted, the MLRA was then amended in a minimalist way. It dealt with small-scale fishing. But the real so-called blueprint for the regulation of the sector, as it is described in their booklet, those came in the regulations to the MRA. So you had the policy with this very good, solid basis, the legislation that recognized the sector, and then the regulations to the MRA, which was really where the regulation was set out. And unfortunately, those regulations were very contradictory to the initial policy, so much so that the minister has that's part of the big problem in the rollout in the Western Cape, is because there were so many contradictions between the policy and the regulations. And the regulations did not learn anything from what the policy process learned about the sector. And so these regulations are really, I would say, at the heart of the difficulties that we have in implementing small-scale fisheries in a way that is helping communities. And so I've highlighted some of the problems. For example, you've had small-scale fisheries in South Africa for decades, some places centuries. So there are local organizations, communities, governance structures. Those are things that you should strengthen through regulation rather than creating a brand new cooperative corporate structure, which, you know, which is then in conflict and then weakens the other structures, as Muniba has also mentioned. And critically, the regulations don't understand the role of fishing in the families and the communities around our coastline. It's not a job for an individual. It is part of the fabric of the family lives. This is the role of women. It's part of the fabric of communities. And if you don't understand that and regulate with that in mind, then you really stand to tear communities apart, which we have seen in many instances. So that's step one, which we did, but then unfortunately didn't learn from. The second step that they recommend is that one must understand the existing legal framework for fisheries before starting to regulate. Now, this is critical because in our country, our constitution recognizes customary or indigenous law as a equal source of law to the common law and other legislation. And specifically in the Kongose judgment, RSDA recognized that customary fishing rights are recognized by the constitution and they're pre-existing. They must be identified and protected. Now, this is a critical issue that the regulators should have looked at before drafting the regulations. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. And to this day, that judgment is not understood, and customary indigenous fishing communities are still struggling to have their rights properly protected. And so that's a key issue I want to flag. It also means that the customary governance structures on the ground were ignored. And so they have been not been part of the co-management that we've wanted to see, as Maniba has mentioned. Then also, of course, I've mentioned the policy that was ignored, but also the constitutional basis for the recognition of the small-scale sector. This is not like the commercial and the recreational sectors, where the minister has a discretion to create those sectors. This sector is based on constitutional rights to food, to customary law, to equality, to freedom of trade, and this is something that's never really been implemented in the regulatory framework. Now, quickly moving on to step three, this is where the booklet says we must then create appropriate frameworks for different contexts, and this follows naturally on if you know what the sector looks like, if you understand the legal framework, then you're in a position to create appropriate frameworks. And we've seen the co-ops in being implemented in a one-size-fits-all manner, a constitution drafted pro forma in Pretoria and handed out. Communities are completely unable to implement, understand, implement those constitutions. And the idea was that we didn't want to repeat the failures in the land sector, so we had a different structure, the co-op. But there's no magic in a structure if you don't capacitate people, if you don't strengthen what's already organization on the ground, then the failure is going to repeat itself, which is what we've seen. And for fishing communities, this is really critical because the governance of a fishing community, when you have a communal right, has an impact on absolutely everything, the daily access rights of a fisher, therefore food security and every single right. And so we must get this governance structure right. We know that the co-ops have failed, and even when it's now going to be rolled out in the Western Cape, it's bound to not be the solution that these fishers have waited on for so long. And this is the moment where we can assess what has gone wrong and try and fix it. And in a way, we are in a good position because the regulations are not so difficult to amend if we can find our solution there, and I think that is the key to the problem. And I was just going to emphasize co-management again, but I think Muniba has done an excellent job, so I'll stop there. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, is that the end of the presentation?
11 at the end of my presentation.
Okay. Honorable members, I invite you. I will start with Honorable Paulson. Can we note hands? Honorable Paulson will be followed by Honorable Mkunu. Okay, in that order, Honorable Paulson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the presenters. I'm afraid the few minutes we have doesn't do this very important topic justice. And as both the presenters said, that we cannot just make decisions about small-scale fishes when we sit in an office in Pretoria. Now, fortunately for me, I grew up in the Western Cape. I know all the small fishing towns, and I've seen how these towns have basically turned into ghost towns over the years. And we say small-scale fishers, but it's small-scale fishers is just a collective of fishers who do not have the massive commercial infrastructure to run big businesses. So it's recreational fishes and it's subsistence fishes, and this is what they use to survive. And growing up in the Western Cape and on the Cape Flats, it was the cheapest form of decent protein for the poor working class communities. And now with the commercialization of our fishing industry and big companies having the lion's share of the tech, it means that these small-scale subsistence and recreational fishes are getting less of that allowable catch. And obviously it allows big businesses now to set prices which most people cannot afford for fish. So not only is it now reducing the quality of life of fishing communities, which are the likes of Saldanha Bay, Pearly Beach, where the poorer communities can't survive because they relied on the ocean to survive. So it's reducing. It also makes fish very expensive for the majority of South Africans. So I think, and the justification is that fishing stocks are depleted by poachers, which is ridiculous. Poachers do not have the resources to go out into the deep ocean and harvest fish. So I think where we should focus our attention on, and obviously because of the rights of indigenous fishes, the historical right, we should look at how to reduce the amount of the TAC that goes to commercial fishes and give a bigger stake to the small-scale fishes. And instead of finding ways of getting small-scale fishes to be managed with a small amount they get, because even as you've said, these cooperatives are impractical. You're asking people who don't know each other to work together as if they know each other and can have a meaningful working relationship. It's almost impractical. So shouldn't we focus on how we can reduce the amount of tax that goes to commercial fishers and increase the amount that goes to small-scale fishers, because they employ more people. They make fish more affordable for most of us. Rather than try and manage the reducing amounts that goes to small-scale fishes. So I'm asking, are we not focused? focusing on the wrong. Yes, sure, small-scale fishers should be given better skills as to how to manage their own activities, but in terms of, shouldn't we also see how we can revive fishing communities by giving small-scale fishers a greater stake of the total allowable catch? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Paulsen. Honorable Nkunu.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation, for the two presentations. We really appreciate the information that we have just been given. Chair, I think because of time, maybe we do need, through you, Chair, another session where we will engage on this presentation, and also that we get the documents so that we are able to go through them thoroughly as members before they are, so that when we engage, we make input. These two presentations are very important, and they talk to the part of our economic see where we need to really create jobs, and where we really need to see that particular economic activity growing, taking the small scale fisheries, assisting them to grow one day to be able to compete with this big industry. So, Chair, I think if we agree that we need more time, I would request that two things be elaborated on the document, so that when we engage, having a thorough and a specific understanding. On the second presentation, Chair, there is a mention that the regulations, they do in a way contradict the Act, the current Act. I would like more details and more specifics on that particular PowerPoint. And there's also a mention of the recognition of indigenous and customary laws, if that can be also elaborated on more comprehensively, so that we can all be able to engage and be able to take decisions on this matter if possible. I would really recommend, because I know that we have to go to join Parliament too, but at the same time, this matter for me, these two presentations for me, they are very, very critical for the economy and for the job that we're called for as the legislators. Thank you so much.
I share the same sentiment that it might not be fair for members of this committee to sufficiently engage this presentation. And it is not out of your making. I see your faces don't look very happy. Both the presenters are not quite happy with us. I want to suggest firmly, Chileka, that we schedule. How is your schedule tomorrow, ladies? Can I just check?
Chair, if you're asking me as a presenter, I'm available tomorrow.
What time tomorrow? I have students that I have to see in the morning, and also I have a lunchtime meeting that is also that I need to. So it depends on the time that I can see what I can fit in tomorrow.
but definitely, you know, available, part of the ones that want to try and see what are the changes and the inputs and the engagements we could have with the committee would be great.
And Honourable Chairperson, the PGA Secretariat is also available tomorrow. And I saw that Massif Fundisa Development Trust Fund also joined us today, and it would be very interesting to have them engage in the conversation as well. We would just request a time that is not earlier than today, since a lot of us are based in New York, so we are. So for us, it was 6 a.m. today. We can do that again earlier, but it's challenging.
Hey, very nice to be speaking to people in New York. Chilis, can you just check for us how is the committee scheduled tomorrow? I have noted a number of questions already, but I also don't want to compromise anybody. But I take full responsibility on behalf of the committee. It would really be nice for all of us to engage here with the PGA. It is not your making at all. It is really something outside our schedule.
Chair, we don't have a meeting tomorrow. So I'll be guided by members as to when they would like to have the session on tomorrow.
How is your schedule tomorrow, Chilis? And
no, Chair, okay, we don't have a meeting.
We don't have?
Yes.
Okay, honorable members, is it fair to ask that we start at proper time? Only one presentation of the PGA.
How did you work
on? For today, I think there was an issue from the presenters that we shouldn't be very early because their time is not South African time. Let's check on that. If you say 9, what time are they? Is it not going to be in the evening with them? And the other thing, the second speaker said she'll be busy with the lecturing in the morning. So let's check the time that will be suitable for all of us. But I'm also worried because these are critical issues that we're discussing, especially with women in fishing. Remember last time we had a problem where we didn't have women in fishing. So, and they are coming with a great idea. We need more women in fishing. But I see there's a marine partial, if I'm not mistaken, which is due next week, Tuesday. And there's a, in the last presentation, there's a comment that the communities are not aware of that policy. So we need to discuss that before we close the meeting. How best can we live?
Good afternoon, sorry. I have to be in
Polson. Polson.
Honorable Mbacha, please proceed. Leave that to me.
So that we make sure that all people that needs to be aware of that I think it's marine partial, that is due next week, Tuesday, they are aware so that they participate in that marine partial. That's very important before we close this meeting. Let's discuss how best we can deal with that. Thank you, Chair.
How is our schedule, Chileka, on Tuesday next week? And how is everyone scheduled on Tuesday next week? Let's start with Honorable Weber.
Yeah, I think the issue is the time thing, because if they were early up this morning, 6 o'clock, and we started with them at 12 o'clock, my suggestion is to do it on a Wednesday, where we start at 12 and we finish at 2, as we start Parliament on a Wednesday by 3. So I think even if we move it to next week, again, if they come in at 12 o'clock, that's 6 o'clock in the morning with them. That is our high got it. So I do think a Wednesday morning will be easier for them. Unfortunately, I do think a 6 o'clock in the morning meeting is one schedule, because if we start at 12, then we will finish at 2:30. We cannot later. So my proposal is either on a Wednesday. Next week, Tuesday is fine, but still the time will be an issue. Thanks.
Okay, there's another proposal. Ms. O'Connor?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm a staff associate and acting director for ELI. I will work with PGA for a number of years, and thank you very much for having me here. I was actually scheduled to give a next presentation on the exclusive zones for small-scale fishing, which is one of the potential solutions on how to increase access rights for small-scale fishers. I didn't give my presentation today because we're short on time, but I would be very happy, of course, to join again the next session when we continue discussions. And I am also in same time zone as Leila, so it would be 6 a.m. for me if it's 12 o'clock for you, but I would be very pleased to join you.
Yeah. Okay. Phyllis, how is your schedule on Wednesday, 12 o'clock for PGA? I will apologize at the later stage for the 6 o'clock awakening.
It's doable, Chase. I'm clear on Wednesday.
Okay. PGA, with all due respect, let me start by apologizing. It is not your making. We really had to process that document. And as you might have seen, that we had to go through it sentence by sentence, because it must be presented to the National Assembly and be adopted there. So it is, we underestimated time. It is not your fault. It is our fault. May I request humbly, with maximum respect, that we reschedule and not even engage any of these presentations, which might also give you enough time to beef it up. And we meet next week, Wednesday, 12 o'clock. I just hope the time, the 6 o'clock does not affect the day there. If it's Wednesday here, it will also be Wednesday that side. Let's then agree tentatively to meet at 12 o'clock on Wednesday. We'll give you full 2 hours, 2 hours, 15 minutes maximum, so that all the presentations are sufficiently engaged. Is that fair?
Honorable Chair, yes, of course, and no problem at all. We are at the Parliament's disposal and very glad to have the meeting. I don't think we will need 2 hours. I think if it's convenient for Parliament, we could start at 12:30 and do an hour and a half, since we already had 2 presentations today, so there would be only 1 or 2 more presentations. And I'm also wondering if the Parliament would prefer tomorrow Wednesday or next week Wednesday.
Tomorrow, this week we are engaged. We're actually preparing to leave for one of our provinces to also do public consultations on climate change bill. So we are proposing next week Wednesday. If we can start at 12, I'm just saying 12 so that everybody has enough time to refresh us, peruse the documents, prepare, and we're able to engage efficiently and fruitfully.
Wonderful. We will do that, and we will also share today's presentations before that and send an updated agenda for next week.
That will be greatly appreciated. We are very sorry to wake you up so early. Pass our regards.
It's really our pleasure.
Pass our regards to the people on the other side of the world.
Thank you. We're hoping to be in South Africa again soon. We miss our members.
Certainly, we hope to see you soon. Honorable members, it is now 10 to 2. Parliament is now starting at 2 o'clock. We will see each other tomorrow and hope to see all of you in the public consultations in the Free State. And next week, we will engage with the PGA. With all of that, thank you very much for all of you who made time to engage with the Portfolio Committee of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment from the National Assembly of the Republic of South Africa. and the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.
Chair, I just want to confirm, what time is next week's meeting starting? At 1:30 or 12:30? Sorry, Chair, what time is that starting?
12.
And the chair is off. 12 o'clock. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you.